Okay. I am.
There's the water bottle.
Oh yeah. Let's turn on the. Let's start on the speakers.
Oh, it might help, huh? Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. Okay. I've had some hay fever issues, so if I sneeze, ignore it. And if I blow my teeth out, ignore that. Okay. So, anyway, I'm Eloise, and I had these experiences when I was 10. I believe I was 9 or 10. And then 33 years ago, I was in this terrible car wreck. And I'm going to tell you before I start that each and every one of you are very special. You have a special spirit. You have a guardian angel. You have families that love you. And there is a hereafter. And it will be different for everybody. I'm not here to get a gold star or an award or a trophy or anything. I just can let you know how it's changed my life and how it's made me be a much better person. And maybe it will ease some of your fears to know that we're all going to be there together one day and we're going to have a great big party. And instead of water, we're going to have Diet Pepsi. So with that, I will start. When I was a little girl, I lived in Lyman, Wyoming. I had rheumatic fever, and my folks had left to take my brother, Tyler, to the doctor. We lived on a street where there was no street lights. It was very scary. And they left me there because it was an emergency, because he was always eating something he shouldn't, and he was choking. And I was scared to death because it was really pitch black. They didn't leave a light on. Why, I don't know, but I didn't. And all of a sudden, this room was just filled with the most magnificent light I can even explain to you. It's just filled the whole room. And there was a person in each right above me. He gathered me up in his arms. And I can't remember what he told me. And I just remember feeling the love and the warmth. And then it was gone. And then my folks come home. They took me to the doctor about a week later, and he told me that my rheumatic fever, it was all gone. I was better. And I know this day that it was my savior. I remember his face vividly, handsome man, his long, beautiful hair, the white robe, and big blue eyes. I remember that. And I will never forget the feeling of, and I experienced it in the car wreck. It's just a feeling of, you know, when they spin cotton candy and you see that going around, that's all fluffy and pink, and it just fills your whole being. It just, it's there. And I just have never doubted it. And my life has been like on a ladder. We all have our ladders. We're up and we're down, and we slip up and we slip down, and we better ourselves and we fall off the ladder and we go back again. But I was going to tell you, when it started out, I have wonderful parents, and they raised me very good. And I have two wonderful brothers, and they're wonderful. They're both totally different than me, but I love them dearly. And I know that my parents are deceased now, and so is my husband. But I know that they watch out for me, and they look over me. And I know my Heavenly Father loves me, for I am definitely a daughter of God. And I've not always been the best person in the world. But I know that I can always do better. And these experiences just bring everything to light. I'll tell you how it started out. We were going to go on a bicycle ride, me and my husband, up to Swan River Valley in Montana. We have six children, and the four girls were home, and we had a granddaughter living with us. And I don't know about you, but these girls, they all thought they needed to be top of the totem pole, be the chief. And we had just had it. We needed a vacation, a break to just be by ourselves, so we didn't actually tire tread one of our kids, literally. So we get going that night, and Dave's out there, and he's loading the car up. We called it Holly Honda. And it's all loaded with the bikes on the top, the coolers are in, and just you just get feelings. And he said, we're going to leave in the morning. We're going to meet all of our friends at 10 o'clock and have breakfast. I said, okay, that's fine. Get up the next morning, go out there. Holly Honda's empty. Oh, no. Tina Topaz has now got all the bikes on top of her and the coolers. And he said, we're taking this car and we're leaving at 8 o'clock. And I said, why? We need to meet them at 10 to have breakfast, like we said. No, he said, I feel like we need to get there. He mentioned that several times. I need to get there. So as we're getting into the car, out comes daughter number two, the one sitting right here. This daughter had been having some real problems, and we just needed some time to regain our thoughts, try to help her to get back where she needed to be. And she's standing there looking at daddy, those big, sad brown eyes. Oh, I just need to go with you. And I'm going, oh, no, no, kids. We are definitely going by ourselves. So here comes the big crocodile tears. He looks at her and he said, if you can get in the car right now, sis, you can go with us. Well, yeah, she's in that car, slick or slick. So off we go. And we're just going in. She drove a while and he drove a while. And it was just really nice. And I was sitting in the back seat and I'm reading a book. And I can't think of what's even by now. It was everything you wanted to know you learned in kindergarten. I'm sure most of you read it. And it was a funny part. And all of a sudden, I just felt sad. And I started having tears. And why, I don't know. And I said, this was a funny story that he told that made me sad. But we stopped to have lunch. We ate our lunch. And he said, we need to hurry. And I'm going, oh, please, just give us a break. Let us relax a minute. No, we need to hurry. He goes back in, gets an ice cream cone. Everything is just falling into a pattern. We need to get there. Okay, we are 20 minutes out of Dillon, Montana. And I'm laying down in the front seat. My daughter's in the back seat. He's driving because he has to get there. He doesn't want me to drive because I drive too slow. I'm like an old grandma, which I am now. And I tell you my birthday, but then you'd know I'm older than dirt. So we won't tell you that day. So anyway. But I brought my book back with me because Arvin Gibson heard me speak and he wrote my story down, bless his heart, and wonderful man. And it was a wonderful experience. And as I told him, I said, it has changed my life considerably. I hope it touched someone else's lives. So as we were getting in the car and we're heading back out and we're driving along, and all of a sudden, he hollers, they're going to hit us. They're going to hit us. We are on a road. We're on this lane over here. They're over here. And there's a great big gully between us. Apparently, this little lady that was driving, they're from Canada, fell asleep. And she missed the guardrail, they said, by a fourth of an inch. If she had hit the guardrail, she would have missed us. But she came down, went right through the gully and hit us head on, right on. And I just remember to this day, even though it's been 33 years, I can still hear the car with the glass breaking, the car rolling. I can hear my daughter over there crying and screaming, and then it stops. I look over, my Dave slumped over. And I'm thinking, I got to get out of this car. We just filled it with gas and I can't open the door. I look up. There's two persons just in the window, bright as the winter snow. I don't know who they are. I've never seen them before. And I thought, is that my grandparents? And I thought, no, they're both men. And they looked at me and the one said to me, as plain as I'm talking to you today, pull your legs up to your chest. Wrap your arm around your legs and you shall live. And then they were gone. And I thought, okay, well, I guess I can do this. But now I got to remember, I'm wearing the car engine underneath my right armpit over here. And I'm about as limber as nothing. But I did. I pulled it up. And that's probably what really saved my life right there. Now, we're laying there. And all of a sudden, I'm not there. I'm looking down and me and my husband are right there side by side. He's still slumped over and I'm still hanging onto my body. He looks at me and he said, you need to go back, hon. You need to raise our girls. And I remember thinking, no, you go back and raise 14 teenage girls. I'm going to stay right here where I'm at. And it was the most warm experience. It's like putting your head inside of an oven. It's just warm. It was comforting. It was just very, it was very fast. It was very peaceful. Very, very peaceful. Just going from one place to another. Just a piece of cake. So if you're ever worried, I think we worry about when we're going to pass away, how we're going to pass away. Is it going to hurt? Nobody wants to hurt. It's just not in our makeup because the body wants to live. My body wanted to survive and I had to go back. And it's just amazing how everything came back in because there was three young men that was just over the hill. They had been out the day before. They had spotted a white fox and they were looking for it. And they happened to just be out there looking for this fox and they seen our dirt and the car. They came right over to help us. And they're the ones that called, I guess, the ambulance to come and to get us out. And they were just being very kind and very, very caring and very loving. And I just remember thinking, oh boy, my poor Dave. And he, I know, was up there with me looking at our bodies, and we both returned to our bodies at the same time, I'm sure, because he reaches over and he says, I love you, babe. And he always took my bangs over like this. He knows I hate my bangs touched, just not for me. And then that was, and it was all gone. And the paramedics was getting me out and they said, why are you like this? I said, because I was told by someone to pull my legs out. And they're going, there's nobody here. You're having problems. I'm going, no, I know what these people told me. And for many years, actually, it's been like 30 years, I couldn't think of who these people were. And finally, one day, the light bulb goes off in my head. It takes 30 years sometimes. I had twin brothers that passed away when they were born. And because this person just were identical, it had to be them. And I will know them when I see them again one day. It gives me goosebumps that I've never met them because I was like five when they were born. So your Heavenly Father does look out for you. He loves you. I've had so many experiments. It's just wonderful things happen. I just remember the guys that were trying to help us there and the people at the hospital, and everybody was just so kind. And we're on life support because it broke my neck in two places. I supposedly should be paralyzed. It broke my ribs, ruptured my spleen, smashed all my stomach up. Now what else did it do to me? I was thinking, anyway, I was just full of glass and they just said, you probably won't live. But I was on life support and I knew that I had to come back and take care of these four girls. And he was called home to do many wonderful things. And since then, we've had a lot of little experiences that have happened. Like the one day, I was in a hospital bed in my bedroom. And the little granddaughter that was living with us came in. We said, oh, what have you been doing, little Marcy? She said, oh, I was outside talking to Papa Dave. And we're going, okay. I said, well, what did Papa Dave say? She said, well, I just jumped from the trampoline. He told me he loved me and everything was going to be okay. So she had a little experience right there. These people love us. They come back to help us to move on. And if we happen to slip off the ladder, so to speak, we can get right back up. Just know that his presence was there with me. And the one experience I did have, and I hadn't shared it with a lot of people, is I am LDS and I was at the temple about 4 months after he had passed away, and everybody just kept pressuring me. Do you think Dave will be here? Well, I don't know. I don't still know. Well, the ceremony was all over and I'm sitting there and the room gets extremely, extremely hot. And I'm thinking, okay, am I just having one of my hot flashes or what? And then all of a sudden, there goes my bangs right over the side. And I hear him right behind me saying, I love you. It's going to be okay. And it was gone just that fast. But the feeling, the softness, the colors, just the colors to associate with all that, it's amazing. So I got up and I told the gentleman that had just finished the ceremony, and I said, this was really wonderful. I said, you know that my husband passed away a few months ago, and I felt like he was here. And he said, oh, sweetie, he was here. He was standing right behind you. He said, that's that good looking guy, that cute little beard. And I said, oh yeah, he was here. So these things happen. And I know he's been with me before, and I haven't had it for quite a while, but he always wore this cologne that was called Polo. And I'd be doing something, I could smell it. And I'm thinking, okay, where is he? But if you sit very quiet and don't let anything else interrupt you, these thoughts will come into your head. And everybody's going to have these because you are very, very well loved. And it's just nothing to be that I, well, how do I want to put it? I've never seen anybody or talked to any grandparents or any buildings or anything. I just know that what I've seen, what I witnessed, that there is definitely life after death. You do not need to be afraid. Our Heavenly Father loves you dearly, very dearly, and wants you to return home to Him, no matter how long our life is here on this earth. It's been a long 33 years. I had to raise these girls, and let me tell you, it was a real treat. We've had some real challenges here, but you're strong. You pull your bootstraps up, and you remember these experiences because they do make you stronger. And when you slip off the ladder, you just take 5 minutes yourself, sit down, and you rethink all these thoughts back in your head and know it's going to be okay. And these people that Arvin wrote about, there's like 18 of them in this book, and they've had wonderful experiences. They've visited people, they've seen places. I did not do that, but I know what I've seen, I know what I heard, and I know it's definitely true. And I just want you to know that. And I hope it touches somebody's heart in here today that you'll know that it's okay. Sometimes we're scared. Sometimes I'll be thinking, oh, I can't really breathe very good today. Am I just going to be at the day? Am I going to croak? Oh, well, let's see. I've done right after I started going down to a singles conference down in Provo at BYU. And you got to remember, since I've had this accident, I'm really a klutz. I mean, I can't walk a straight line anymore. I can't cut a pattern straight. And I forget things. And it's just all trauma. And we're at this conference, and I'm over and I'm getting my salad. And I run into this guy. I just about knocked him right off his pedestal. And I said, I am really sorry. And I told him who I was. And he told me his name was Murray. And I said, oh, please come sit with all of us single ladies. They'll love you. I said, you're a young, handsome man. Come sit with us. And he did, and we're sitting there talking and visiting, and he gets a phone call, and he said, oh, I need to go take this phone call. It's from my mother. I said, oh, that's fine. Go ahead. And he said, yeah, she's been really sick and been worried about things because they were in a car wreck and it killed somebody. I knew in my heart exactly what he was talking about. It was the lady that hit us. And I won't tell you her name, but I knew in that instant I needed to be forgiving, because in my heart, I was having a hard time thinking, you were just whoop-de-dooing down the road, probably not paying attention, and you took away my livelihood, my soulmate, and left me with four girls to raise, which was real intolerable sometimes, but I love them. And I just knew I needed to be able to show that love, forgive them, and let him know it was okay. Because I felt in my heart after I pondered this, that we probably knew them in the pre-existence, and we probably planned all this out. I know my Dave, we probably planned it all out. They probably said, oh, hey, we're going to go up here, ride our bicycles, and you're going to be doing this. And as you're coming down the road, it's probably be my time to come home. So let's just plan it out. Now, that's just my perception of things, but it was just amazing how I would run into one guy out of, I don't know how many singles it was there at that. And I met him a couple more times after that. And he was from Canada. He didn't live too far from them. And then I've never seen him again. And I can't remember his name anymore. I just remembered it was Murray. And he was just a sweetheart. And it's just how things go in a pattern. It's just premonition after premonition. And you just have to know that there's always a plan. And sometimes plans change. We could be sitting here tonight, tomorrow. Some of us might not be here, but we're going to be together one day together, all of us. But tonight, I never have told my daughter's side of the story. I don't know why I didn't. She was in the car with us. This is my Melanie. And she was the one that gave Daddy the crocodile tears and a big sob story to come with us when I really wanted to leave her home. She was having some real difficulties in her life, and we just needed to get our strategies together so we could help her the best we could without having to really, like I said, tar trip her. And it was one of those things that she needed to be with us. And so I invited her tonight, and she said she'd rather have all her teeth pulled without Novocaine than do this. And I said, oh, sorry about that. You already done that. So if she gets talking and her chompers fall out, oh, well, join the crowd. But if she doesn't mind, and if you guys don't mind, I'd like to have her come and tell you just a couple of things. And I'm sorry I kept it from everybody this long. I guess I just totally forgot that these things are very dear to me, and they're true. And I know that these things are meant to be, and it guides us in ways, and just it helps us to be a much better person, because the world needs now is love. So I just want her to, she's going to come and tell you a couple of little things here. And I'm just trying to think if I've left anything out, because, you know, it's been 33 years, and sometimes, oh, you just get old. You know how it is. I can't remember what I ate for breakfast this morning. It was probably a Diet Coke and a cookie, if I remember correctly. But I do know that the men that helped us and the people at the hospital that helped us and all the things that have occurred since then, and it's all true. And I'm sure many of you have had many experiences like this, or someone's really sick in your life and you may be losing them. No, you're really not losing them. You're just gaining a little extra time here with them right now, but we'll always be together forever and ever, all the time. So enjoy each other, cherish each moment, always tell each other you love each other and that you care. And I wasn't going to bring her up here, and she's going to probably not be happy. She's not going to give me my Diet Coke when I get through. Would that be okay? Okay. Guess what? You're on, dear.
My name's Melanie. It was 1990, May 18th, and I was 17, 5 days before my birthday when we were in the car accident, right? I'm correct, yeah. So I was just turning 18, and my mom is correct. It was the last minute. And I don't know why. I felt like I just needed to go. Hurry and pack my bags, and I need to be with my mom and dad. I needed to go. I don't know what it was, but, and before that, I was struggling with some depression and with school and all that. And my parents were trying to help me, so they figured that maybe this would be good for me to go. And my dad did. He did change the car, because I went out there and both cars were changing. He says, oh no, we're gonna take this car. And when we were traveling and all that, I just kept saying that I wanted to drive, and he just kept saying, nope, I'm gonna drive, we're in a hurry. And we were just doing everything so super fast. Everything was like fast, because I'm a slow person. And so when we were in the car accident, and like my mom said, I just remember my dad saying, because I was listening to my Walkman and I was in the back seat and I didn't have my seatbelt on. And I remember my dad saying, they're going to hit us. They're going to hit us. They're going to hit us. And I remember sitting up and holding on to the both seats like this and looking up and seeing this vehicle. I mean, it wasn't driving, it was flying towards our car. And I remember them saying, my dad saying, they're gonna hit us. And if I'm correct, if I remember with all the reports, Yeah, we skidded 94 yards and they still hit us head on. And I got knocked out. I got knocked out in the back seat by the cooler, as the paramedics has said. And I was, because I was not wearing my seatbelt, I was stuffed behind my mom's seat on the floor in a fetal position. And when they were looking for me, at first they were looking for a 17-month-old baby. Because my mom kept saying my 17-month-old baby's out there. So they were out there looking for me when actually I was in the car underneath the cooler and the blankets and everything that was in there. And when we got to the hospital and we were in the emergency room, I just kept, I was in critical condition. And they were trying to stitch me up and they were trying to put tubes down my throat, up my nose and everything. And I just kept asking, where's my mom? Where's my dad? Where's my mom? Where's my dad? And I was worried. I was concerned, you know, because, you know, we grew up in a tight family. I mean, we had supper 5 days a week. We had dinner on Sundays. We had family home evening. We camped. We did football games. Sports, everything. I mean, I thought I grew up in a pretty good family. And then when I was in the emergency room is where they had us before they took me up to emergency surgery. I remember the doctor coming and telling me that your mother's in critical condition. But we have her stable, but I'm sorry, but we lost your father. And I just remember this doctor looking at me and all I could see was his eyes and him holding my hand. And then next thing I know, I guess I was in surgery. And then as days went by, family started showing up, my little sister, my big sister, my brothers. My grandparents and my grandmother Beth came. The car accident was on May 18th and my birthday is May 23rd. And they wanted to do the funeral on the 23rd. And because you were on life support and in critical condition and I was so critical, they had to proceed on with the funeral. And where my dad was a very well-known guy. I mean, he was a firefighter and he was fire chief and a lot of people knew him and he was part of the Corporal Olympics. And I mean, my dad just did everything. I mean, he was just there for everybody. And I just remember, I just kept saying to everybody, to family, the nurses and the doctors, just, I kept pleading with them and saying, please, 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 I don't want to live the rest of my life knowing that my dad was buried on my birthday. So I don't know who it was. They changed the day to the day after, which would have been May 24th. So on May 23rd, I turned 18 in the hospital. I had some visitors. People were coming in, people I didn't even know. Were giving me gifts, saying hi. I can't even remember their names. Later on that night, it was later on, and I was by myself in the hospital bed. And I remember just laying there and I was angry. I was angry with God that I felt like he, like, destroyed my family. Like, you know, he took away my dad. He was my best friend. We went to football games. I mean we would stuff church without my mom knowing. Yeah. And go home and watch the Cowboys and the 49ers play, and then we would come back and act like we've been in church. So I mean so we were really close. And there was kind of I know my dad had six of us, but there was a little special bond that me and my dad had. I And it was, what I was told is, you know, when I was born in 72, that's when they started letting the fathers come in to see the babies be born. And out of, because I was his fourth, I was the first one that he got to see be born. And that's when they used to spank you on your feet instead of your bum. And he just had that little special bond with me. And then, you know, because when I was younger, when I was 10, I was in a bad skiing accident and I broke my leg in many places. And because my mom worked and was taking care of grandkids and my other sisters, my dad would always take time off work and take me to the hospital because I had many, many surgeries to because I hit a tree and shattered my kneecap and everything. And he was always with me during all these surgeries and he would spend the night with me and he would be there for me. So we just had this bond. But anyways, that night before the funeral or the next day before the funeral, I remember being in the hospital, just laying there on my back, just crying and crying, just sobbing and just crying. And just, I just couldn't believe that this happened to my family. And I just didn't understand why would this happen to me? Why would, I mean, it just sucked. And I remember rolling over to my right side and putting my hand on the hospital handrail. And all of a sudden, I felt this warmth come over me. And I felt this presence. And it was my dad. I didn't see him. I didn't see him, but I felt his presence there. And as I put my hand there, I could feel his hand hold on to my hand, like this, and just held on to my hand. He told me, he said, everything's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. And I love you, Melanie. And I said, I love you too, Dad. And then he left. And I felt, and then I just started crying. And then I looked over at the door and I see the silhouette of, to me, was a nurse. Had short hair. I never really got a look at her face. And she came over and she pulled up a chair and she sat down as I sat there and sobbed. And I told her that my dad was just here. And he held my hand. I felt him hold my hand and he told me that it's going to be okay. And she told me, this lady, and I thought it was my nurse. And she told me that sometimes before people have their funerals, that they will visit you and let you know they're present and let them know that you're going to be okay and they're okay. And this lady that I thought that was my nurse sat there with me. And I don't know how long she was there with me, but she sat there with me as I sobbed and sobbed and talked about my dad. And she put her hand on my arm and she would just sit there and go like this. And then she would just sit there and rub my hair and rub my face and told me that, you know, your dad loves you and he wanted you to know that he's going to be okay, that you're going to be okay, that you're going to make it through this. And she told me it was her time to go. And she got up and she walked out. And a couple of minutes after that, my nurse comes in and I said, I'm sorry. And I apologize. I said, I'm sorry that I just cried and cried and cried and went on and on and on. And she goes, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you were just in here with me. And you sat down with me. And she says, no, I was not in here with you. And it's only, her name was Kelly, Nurse Kelly. And Nurse Janice were the only two nurses on the pediatric floor that night. And they have not came into my room. And still to this day, I don't know who that lady was, but it definitely was not neither one of my nurses. I don't know if it was a family member that has passed away, or if, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe one day I would find out, but I don't know, but I just remember her coming in there, and she comforted me, and she made me feel better to know. And then, you know, after I got home and all that, I struggled for a long time. I was still kind of angry, and I was upset because, you know, I didn't get to go to the funeral. I didn't have closure. I struggled with that because I felt that, you know, well, I missed my own dad's funeral. I didn't even get to be there. And I held grudges. And then because of that, as I started being in my early 20s, I got into drugs. And over the years, they progressed. And I battled drug addiction for a good 24 years. And we're hard drugs. And like meth and heroin and stuff like that. And there was this time, and I can't even remember. It was a couple years ago, about five years ago. And maybe three, somewhere. I apologize. So anyways, in my drug addiction, I didn't really care what people thought or how I hurt people around me and how I was destroying my family. And I had a son that I lost for a little bit, and my mom stepped up and helped me out, and my family never gave up on me. And I still to this day, I don't know why there is a purpose why I am here, but in my drug use, I have overdosed 11 times. And for some reason, I am still here. And the last time that I overdosed is, I remember knowing, okay, I have to back up a little bit. The other times that I have overdosed, it's a very scary feeling knowing that you're overdosing and that you might not wake up. But this one time was my last time of overdosing, is I remember sliding down off of this chair and sliding down and looking up. And it was the most peaceful, warm feeling that I've ever experienced in my life. And I just looked, and when people say that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, there really is, because I saw this light at the end of this tunnel, and there was this guy there, and he had a beard. And to me, it was my dad. It was my dad. And he's saying, it is not your time. You need to go back and you need to get better. And then the next thing I know, I woke up. My mom was very, very angry with me. Very, very angry with me. And I knew what I had to do. So I had to step up and decide, you know, that was very comforting to me. And I was ready to go to heaven. And that's where I wanted to go. But apparently my dad said that it wasn't my time yet. And so I decided to go and get help, and I went, got clean, and now I've been clean over 3 years, and I got a great great relationship with my mom. You're my best friend, and we've always been close, but this is the closest that we have been. We do everything together. Okay. We can confide in each other. She's always checking up on me when she knows that, like, I'm sad, making sure I'm okay, doing my laundry for me, making sure, like, making sure like when I got my teeth pulled out and I had to be on medication, you know, because pain pills are opiates, heroin's an opiate. And she watched over me to make sure that I'm not going back down that path again. And I did it. And I believe that there is life after death. And I for a long time, years and years, you know, it took me a long time to realize. I mean, I just turned 51. It took me more than half. It took me 48 years to realize what my life was worth. And now I'm here standing in front of all you people telling you this story. And I really didn't want to come, and I really didn't want to stand up here and tell my story, but because I'd never really tell anybody. I might tell my friends or family members, but I never done that this before. But the main reason I did it because I love my mom, and she asked me to come with her and share my experience. And that's the main reason why I did it, is to support my mom and to share my story. So
thank you.
We have about 5 minutes left for questions and answers. So if you have a question, ask it very quickly. Wait till the microphone gets to you, and then I'll ask you to repeat the question and then give the answer so the people who are online can do it.
If I can remember.
You'll remember.
You don't know.
Did it hurt?
Is it
on?
Can you
hear
me? Yeah.
Yeah.
I can talk
about it. You're fine.
Did
it hurt to go back into your body? She asked, did it hurt to go back in your body? Yes, it did. It hurt extremely bad. It didn't hurt when I left. It was a piece of cake. It was peaceful. It was wonderful. But going back in, I was like, oh my gosh. You'd probably rather have 25 kids and all your teeth pulled out. And yeah, hair transplants and all that fun stuff. Because it was not fun. But it does hurt. Thank you. Yes.
How was it that holding your legs helped you lift?
He asked how it helped by putting my legs up together or to hold on to them. I think when I pulled them up, it probably held me together because my ribs were broke and my spleen was ruptured. Because I'm full of staples. My stomach was just obliterated. And that probably just stopped all the bleeding. I would imagine that probably. But held me together because I remember trying to breathe and it was like, you know, big bad asthma attack. So I'm sure that's what the people told me. Yes.
Did you have a life review?
Of what with me?
Did you have a life review?
A life?
Life review. Were you?
Oh, a life review. Right. You know, a life review? Not really. I think I was just listening to what my husband was telling me. I had to go back and raise these girls and it was going to be okay. I'd had a life review, I'd probably been scared to pieces because, we all know how our past are sometimes. It's like, oh, the closet's full of skeletons, close that door.
Unfortunately, our mic isn't working, so if you just speak up. Yes, Cindy.
The people conference, and you met Murray. Was his wife the one
who's
driving the car?
She wants to know when I met Murray, if it was his wife driving the car. No, it was his mother. I think the gentleman here said he thought that the people passed away. They did not pass away. They had, I think, a broken arm and some little bruises. They were very sweet people. They were on their way down to see a grandson get married. And I think they were tired and she'd taken some Tylenol and it just made her tired. And she just hit that guardrail just right because it was just meant to be. But I think about Murray all the time and I wonder where he's at and what he's doing. Bless his heart for putting up with me.
Okay, the mic obviously is working now, so who else?
Oh.
When you left your body and you met your husband in the air, did he look any different? Did you recognize you both were in the spirit? Just curious, what did he physically look like to you?
Okay, he wants to know how we look like after we left our body. Just the same. He was still as handsome as he could be. And of course, I couldn't see myself, but that was probably scary too. But no, just the same. And I just remember his sweet little face and how he always just told me he loved me, always gave me that cute little wink, and well, of course, annihilated my bangs on me. But yes, you're the same. Your spirit, I think, looks exactly like you. I think what we don't realize is our spirits are so wonderful. We are so in tune with our spirits. And when we are in our bodies, we become mortal, and it kind of takes away some of that niceness of our spirit, maybe, because I just know I've met so many people, and there's just so many good people out there. And of course, we know we have some loosey doozies, but we are the same. And I know that when I see my Dave, he'll probably be all young and handsome, still doing aerobics and teaching everybody. And I'm going to be old, decrepit as dirt. So it's scary.
Other question?
Well, great. You're a great audience. I hope this touched your hearts and helped you in some way, and maybe eased your fears and your pain, and knowing that your loved ones, they love you. Heavenly Father loves you. And I'm thankful for all of you here. And I hope it didn't cause anybody to feel sad in any way, because that's not my message. Just be kind to one another. Love each other all the time. I know I have a neighbor. She drives me crazy sometimes. I have to bite my tongue and roll my eyes. And pretty soon my eyes are going to be stuck in the back of my head, because I just think, oh, she's got to have some better qualities. Please help me think of them. And I have to go and think, oh, please forgive me. I know I'm not this good person all the time. And then she'll do something nice. I think, oh, yeah, you're really a sweetheart. And I think next day, oh, my gosh, I must have been having a nightmare. But I thank you, and you're wonderful. One more question.
Did you come back with any kind of gifts or abilities?
Did I come back with any gift and ability? Yes, I think so. I think my ability to love people more and to learn how to be a better person, because I like to be in control. And that's just all there was to it. It's my way or hit the road, Jack, because I'm not going to put up with the nonsense, as my girls will tell you. And I found that I can be more forgiving, but I also found that I don't need as much sleep. For some reason, I can get by on a couple of hours. Of course, that could be due to all the caffeine I drink too, but I really feel, but I always have this little feeling. Sometimes I'll get these feelings, and it's just an intuition. Or sometimes you ever just feel somebody that they're there, and you look and they're gone. Yeah, it's your spirit telling you it's a okay. Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
This will end the formal part of our meeting. If you have a question, you're welcome to come up and ask her after. Thank you so very much.
Big bottle of water. You know what that happens. If you drink all this, not good.
Oh. So one of these out there somewhere.